This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, as we continue, it is hour three rolling along this morning. And we've had a pretty good morning this morning with two things going on in the news. Of course, the NBA playoffs rolling along, and then the NFL, I should say, can't really help itself. It keeps leaking out games despite its big show, its big two-hour show tonight on the NFL schedule release. I think, Ron, you asked a very good question earlier, which is, when do the teams get to go, screw it, I'm going to release my fun video that I've put together on my season? That's a good question. I mean, because are they coming out when this launched, or are these?
Yeah,
do they
is there a certain time?
Yeah. They go, hey, 4 o'clock Eastern, you can start.
I mean, this is one of the craziest days in sports that I think we have.
I know, it's completely
because,
crazy.
You know, one, we already know the opponents. It's just when are we facing them?
That's right.
That's all it is. You know, and then we just get to know, like, all right, you know, how many primetime games does my team have? I mean, if you're a Houston, Texas fan, chances are it's zero.
Yeah, zero. Maybe one. Yeah, that's it.
You know, will Denver get hurt because of how they performed last year?
Yeah. Or is there still like, well, there's Sean Payton, so there's hope. And
yeah. I mean, last year, they were like, you know, 7 in a row. I think it was something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Every single primetime game featured the Broncos.
Oh, they were.
And we all got burned.
So much.
But will they do Al Michaels a solid this year?
Yeah. Will they do him a solid? Give him some matchups. Nevertheless, there was 5 games that were on the international circuit, 2 in Germany, 3 in London. And we talked about this yesterday, but I wanted to point out, Robert on Facebook gave me an article to read, and I didn't get to read it, but I saw the gist of it, which talked about athletes in London and England and how much they pay in taxes. And it's pretty wild. It's pretty high for a professional athlete living in England, what they pay in taxes. Oh, it's very high. It's pretty high. And
so they do tax the rich over there? Just asking.
A
friend.
They do. They don't. They get you pretty good on that. But that, and we were talking about this yesterday. If you're the NFL and you're trying to create an environment for an expansion team, right, for London, how would it work in the landscape of American football? Now, don't get me wrong. Athletes have said, hey, in a lot of sports, hey, it's better to play in Texas where there's no income tax. It's better to play in Florida where there's no state income tax. They'll pay their federal, but if you play in California, it's going to cost you a lot more than if you play in Florida. We have that. But as a whole, football athletes in Europe, I mean, in England, get really burned on taxes. Now, I know that there are, you know, the Formula One drivers, for example, live in Monaco. They'd rather have their home base in Monaco rather than in London. They get criticized for that. Some of them that are British drivers get criticized for that. Why are you taking the tax revenue that we should be getting and moving it to a country where the tax burden is very, very less, much less? But if you're the NFL, you have to weigh this in the equation. Global expansion is fine. We get it. But it has to come in some reasonable assessment of what the competitive field would look like for that team. And here's my problem. Whenever I've talked about this with other people, the response is always, "Oh, they'll be able to, there'll always be people that will want to play for a London NFL team regardless of all the things you mentioned." That's not how you build a team in competition, just by fielding a roster. That's not how you do it. Meaning, you have to get some free agents. You have to get some experience. You have to get some guys that would be willing to do it. Now, there will be people that will be like, sure, why not? But would that team be at a disadvantage based on taxes, location, travel, all of that? And is that something the NFL even cares about? Now, look, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are not moving to London, right? They're getting their stadium renovated. That's going to take a while. They've been looking at other locations to play games while their stadium is being renovated. They've talked about Camping World Stadium in Orlando. They've talked about Ben Hill Griffin Stadium in Florida. I hope it's not more games in London. I in the end, they're, I don't think they're moving, but I can't guarantee that. I can't guarantee that. Would it just be better if the NFL had a division in Europe and grew the game in a way that, all right, there will be players that will want to come over here and play because there's an opportunity and they don't worry about taxes or their family or travel or anything because they're young? If that's a better way to do it. Can you imagine if you signed a contract with a team, a big contract with a team, and there would be, they would, they're moving to London? It's like it doesn't the argument doesn't make sense systematically. Like it, like when you break it down into the real reasons, it just is an argument people have made because they look at the games in London. They go, what exactly is the end game here? The end game can't possibly be giving this city meaningful NFL games, and there's no other thing that they're trying to do. There's always a feeling that there's a larger story that's being missed whenever an entity like the NFL does something. Why would they play three games in London? Why is Jacksonville there twice? Right? That doesn't make any sense. Is it rewarding the people of London for their loyalty to Jacksonville over the years who have played there? What is it?
Is that a reward?
Yeah, exactly. What is it? Like, now they're good? Now we give you two games. When they were fighting for the number one pick in the draft or a top five pick in the draft, now they made the playoffs. Here is your, you know, here is your AFC South winning, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't know what the end game is. I just cannot wrap my head around this. Now, what if the NFL puts a Super Bowl in London? Would that go over well with people? It's, they've already got three games. Germany's already got two. That means five teams have lost a home game to a game overseas. What if they put the Super Bowl over there? How much would that be a problem for the American audience? By the way, wouldn't it be really hard for the people in London if they put the Super Bowl there? Because we were like, yeah, we kind of like to watch this thing around 6 Eastern time. Oh, my God, that's like 11 o'clock. Or, yeah, I know, but you'll suck it up. You'll be fine. Now, do I think the NFL would do that? No, I don't think the NFL would do that. I don't think the NFL would put the Super Bowl over there. I know there's people who've discussed this possibility. I don't know if they would. I think they understand what their event is and how. Yeah, if you want to, I think Roger Goodell would be very cautious of the perception if you took your championship game and moved it to another country. If you allowed for all the pomp and circumstance of the league to be held over there, because if people know this, the NFL needs 2 weeks from the championship games to the Super Bowl. They don't need it like desperately, but they need it because the Super Bowl is not just a game. It is a celebration of the NFL all week long. It is where everybody comes into town. Everybody who's anybody comes into town. All your sponsors that you've had all year round, they come in. There's a fan fest. There are athletes and celebrities all over the place. It's all week long. You need to set that up. You need to set it right. And then the teams are playing, and they've got a big now fan fest where people can watch the press conferences of their players and whatnot. If that was all over in another country, regardless of the relationship that we've had with that country, would they be getting the NFL product? I think we'd lose our minds.
Yeah. We definitely would.
Right.
I mean, there's something about, you know, it's, and again, it goes to why are we pushing London so hard? I don't understand it.
I do want to know what the end game is. If the NFL said, look, it's nothing more than just, hey, look, we're expanding the global brand. We want to sell jerseys and great.
Which I get.
Fine.
I mean,
I get it. We get it.
You're wanting to make more money.
Sure.
I understand that.
I understand that. But is there a larger motive behind this?
You know, it's like, you know, you look at the NBA, right? The NBA does great overseas because they all play the same game. And so they want to see the best. It's like us watching, you know, English Premier League or La Liga or Bundesliga. You know, we're wanting to watch the best of the best play. So we're in tune to watching the other countries' soccer leagues. Football is a small market. You know, that's, and I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, it's not, I don't know how well, I don't know how sellable it is around the world. You might find a few pockets, and maybe that's what they're trying to expand is just, you know, just England and Germany. And that's it. I mean, I don't see where else they can go with it.
Well, okay, but let me give you a thing. You don't necessarily have to go to a place where the interest is there. You can go to a place, and over time, the interest comes.
Right. No, but I'm saying, are they trying to find a way to sell the NFL to France? Is France buying it?
Right.
You know, not just the game. I'm just talking about just wanting to watch it on TV.
Right. So, but let's say you said we're going to have a game in Paris.
Right.
And the first year it's like, eh. But then the second year is, eh. And then the third year is, eh. And then the fourth year is, all right.
Right.
Like you.
I mean, we've seen it with London.
You just like look. They've been taking preseasons. I remember when there's a famous picture of Refrigerator Perry next to a British guard. That was a preseason game that they send. They've been tapping the London market for a long.
And they should
long,
send
long
just preseason games,
right?
Over there.
That's right. Right. They've been doing that for a long, long time. They've been kind of tapping it and trying to get that international thing going from Pete Rozelle's days. But what I think people are wondering is. You've been doing it for a while. It grew from a preseason game every now and then to an NFL game every now and then to an NFL game every year to three NFL games. What's the end result of this? Yeah. Is the end result of it just we're going to play five games in London eventually, and that's pretty much it. We're going to tap out at that. Or is the idea of, you know, we could make it work. You don't think we can, but we could make it work. To give you the London, whoever wants to move there, right? Is that an issue? Any way you want it, it's the way you need it. Any way you want it. She loves to laugh,
she loves to sing, she does everything. This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, Throwback Thursday, 1980. We go back to Dr. J's baseline bucket against the Lakers. And now we've got Journey?
Yo, yeah.
All right, a little Journey.
Dr. J was probably singing this song as he was doing that. Like, you know, like, I'll do it any way I want
to. In the locker room. So, yeah, if you haven't seen Showtime on HBO and you have a chance to rewatch it or watch it on the app or whatever, watch it. It was actually not bad.
Watch it on Max.
Watch it on Max.
Not HBO Max, just Max, because HBO Max takes too long to say.
That's right. Yeah, just watch it on that. It was actually really good. It's sort of a reminder of what, like, and, you know, like, we look at NBA as, and we've seen it become so glamorous, and it's like everything is first class, high class, right? And then you kind of reminded that, yeah, you know, sometimes the locker rooms were crappy. You know, these arenas were kind of dumpy. And yet they would, you know, they were playing basketball at the highest level. So, but yeah, 1980, the NBA Finals between the Sixers and the Celtics, the iconic baseline bucket from Dr. J underneath Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
And I'll never forget the first time I went to the Forum and watched Lakers play. I mean, sitting in the seats, it was great. I mean, great views.
Right.
But I remember walking through the concourse and it was just like, you know, I felt like the floor has been sticky for, you know, 20 some odd years.
Oh, sure. Right. I mean, yeah.
It's like sticky the first day it was open. It's like, yeah, but is this soda?
Yeah. You go into these locker rooms today and it's like high class. Everything
is beautiful. Ridiculous.
Everything is. But back then it was a locker room. It's supposed to smell. It's supposed to be awful.
Yep.
Like hooks on the walls and stuff. It's gross. It's gross, but nevertheless, Dr. J's bucket on our Throwback Thursday today. So we've been just talking a little bit about the NFL. I think you and we've talked about London for almost every time we've had a game. Every year we talk about London, but I will say that I think it's the NFL has done a good job of finding where it can be popular and exploiting it. But like I said earlier, there are five teams that lost a home game to an international game. Now, for them, that's fine, right? It's better to go on these international games where you're getting the attention and expanding your brand. But it does stink for fans who are like, listen, I love going to the games. I want to go to the games, and I got to get. There's a game in Frankfurt, Germany.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, and with the international games, you know, all eyes will be on you.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
exactly.
Another bonus is that you're the only one. You're the only game scheduled at, what is it, 8 a.m. Eastern?
Yeah, that's right. And everybody wakes up to watch you.
Just fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I do love waking up and just be like, oh, look, there's a game on right now. This is fun.
Yeah. No, I don't mind. I think the Wembley Stadium and,
yeah,
and Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, they're fun environments. Munich was great. Germany was great last year. It was fantastic. That atmosphere was eye-opening to me, how unbelievable that environment was in Germany last year between the Bucks and the Seahawks.
But I just don't know what the reasoning of pushing regular season games.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern. You know, thing is where do you want to go with this? What exactly do you want to go with this?
Could you think they would ever do like exhibition games? Because during the summertime, and it's just the way. I mean, Europe does it right. You know, during the summertime, that's when their leagues are off, and they'll have like a season long tournament in the United States. And it'll be like the top clubs. I mean, sure, some of the star players aren't really playing. Maybe they'll play for like 5-10 minutes and that's it. But you're seeing the club play. But they're all exhibition games. I don't mean anything. And it's just a way for these guys to get extra workouts in, fine-tune, you know, get ready for the season. Is that something that, you know, think the NFL would ever consider? It's like, well, let's go over there and, you know, I guess have a football tournament, a playoff.
I would have a hard time.
Traveling through Europe.
With the nature between the owners and the players to get them to agree to something like that.
Yeah, during like training camp.
Yeah, they don't even want to go to practice. Like they don't even want to go to camp.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, you do. You have like your star players sit out the entire time.
Like
I don't
like voluntary workouts, and they're like, yeah, they're voluntary. Like, you know, the old coach would be like, it's voluntary. It means not voluntary. And the players' union's like, yeah, it does. It means voluntary. We're not coming.
You hear the, you know, Baltimore fan, Ravens fans are losing their minds right now because Lamar Jackson's not opting in for the voluntary camp.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So to get them to be like, you want to go over to England and you want to go to Europe and play in a tournament? They're like, man, probably not. But, look, it's an idea that works in a level of if you're looking for something to give Europe, but they're already giving Europe valuable regular season
games. I know they are. I'm trying to find the alternative.
Why would a European go, why am I watching this summer practice with nobodies when in a couple of months you're giving me a real game with real star athletes in games that matter? I don't need this, you know? But because the world is smaller, I mean, you're not bringing this sport into a lot of areas where they have zero idea what this is. You know, if you've got a group of young people that have the internet, that are online, you know, they're not like, you know, cut off from society on an island somewhere. I mean, if they're just regular teenagers in Europe that go on TikTok, they know what American football is. You know, they may not like it. They may not know it. They may not understand it, but they know what it is. It's a global, the Super Bowl is watched around the world, but my thing is, how much of this do you want, NFL? Like, do you want to send a Super Bowl over there? Do you want the Super Bowl to be played in London?
No.
I hope you don't.
Well, I mean, because I look at it, I said in the last segment, it's like, I look at it this way. It's like, you know, is the world reciprocating that? Or, you know, would they ever send us a championship-level game?
No.
They'll never do it.
But exactly. I mean, we're not getting the championship of the Premier League here.
No.
Crying out loud.
I mean, they don't have one.
But, right, but I mean, whatever.
But we're not, you know, but get like, it. You know, the Carling Cup or the FA Cup, they're never going to send the final to us.
So why don't they look at our market like the NFL looks at that market? We were
right.
Just talking about this off the air. Like, you've got two cities in America right now that don't have teams, that are big cities. You've San Diego and St. Louis.
Yeah.
They had teams and lost them. Now, in St. Louis's case, there was a situation involved with the Dome, and it was a bad situation for Kroenke. Love him or hate him, they didn't work that out. Him and the city couldn't work that out, so he moved the franchise. Now, I've got a lot of problems with the move, but I understand when owners want to stay in a place. Kroenke is from the area. He wasn't trying to go to L.A. as like an outsider. He wanted to make it work, but again, the lease and the stadium and who pays for what, wanting a new stadium, not getting a new stadium, it's a problem. But let's say that you are the NFL and you're looking to send some team in the league wants to relocate. I don't know who it is, but let's just say there's a team. And you've got two cities. And let's say the circumstances in both cities, because in San Diego it was the same kind of deal. in the circumstances changed dramatically, meaning there's going to be a brand new stadium being built. It's going to be awesome. It's going to have all the luxury suites you want. It's going to be $2 billion.
Finally get to host Super Bowls again because we've been, San Diego had been blacklisted.
So what does a team in London give you that a new team in St. Louis with a better circumstance give you that doesn't give you? Now, granted, I know London is one of the world cities. It's of all the cities around, that's one of the top world cities. But you're not talking about a culture that's had it embedded into them since birth, what this sport actually is. You're not talking about kids going to high school and seeing it, kids going to college and seeing it, making a part. Like there are kids in America who don't care about football, but have made football their Friday nights in the fall their whole high school life. They may not know who the quarterback is, couldn't care less, don't really care about the team, but has made it the social place to be. I've always told people when I do a local high school here in town, I'm not town, but in the city of Nashville, I cover one of the teams and I do all their games. It's amazing to me. I'll be in the middle of calling a game that is close, tight. I'll look around. Students are walking around, hanging out in groups. Nobody's watching. But that's their social aspect. You're talking about a society that doesn't do that. They do that around regular football, right? I mean, soccer. They don't do that around this. And so when you're the NFL and you're looking around going, where could we go? Like, where could we move to? London's appealing because it's sexy. It's like, oh, it's international. Now we've got a team in England.
Yeah.
But you mean to tell me you can't get just as much out of St. Louis or San Diego if you gave them better stadium circumstances?
And I think you would probably get a better attendance draw over time.
Right.
Like London, you might see a huge uptick right at the beginning, but I think over time they're going to be like, well, why would I go into there on Sunday?
That's the biggest question.
The team that, I have banners and scarves and posters of that I've been following for 50 plus years, add another 80, 90 years because my father and my grandfather followed this team. I'm more in tune to watch them on a Saturday or Sunday or put my money towards them on a Saturday or Sunday than an NFL team.
You cannot grade fan interest when you shove them different teams a couple of times a year. You have to figure out, is this fan base going to stick with this when they stink? Are they going to be mad if they stink? Because if they're apathetic, forget it. But you have to have a fan base that's like, I'm in it, I'm mad, they needed to draft this guy. Are they going to be interested in college football to watch college games to find out who half these guys are that are drafted every April? Like, there's a lot more questions than just finding a major world city and going, boom, let's give them some NFL love. All right, coming up, back to the NBA playoffs and the Suns tonight. Can they win another one at home without Chris Paul?
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue with a wake-up call. All right, who was this? I forgot. Stray Cats?
Queen.
Queen? Was it Queen?
That's Queen.
Why was I thinking Stray Cats? I don't know.
Because they kind of have the... Because Queen, morphed into every type of rock genre
That's right.
And it just does have that, that Stray Cat strut sound that... what's that, rockabilly?
Yeah, 1980. So, by the way, before we get back to basketball... Drew McGarry, who writes, who used to write on Deadspin, I kind of follow his question and answer thing he does, where he's like, people write in questions. Somebody had a good question I thought about that I liked, which was, if you took the Beatles and they released Yesterday Today, would it be a hit? And his thought was no, that no one from the 60s, those songs would have no place on the top of the charts because they're all classics, but they were classics of their time and they became classics. But then that music would not fly in 2023.
I'm going to have to agree with that because
I kind of agree too.
And my rationale is that Oasis had a very similar sound or came out with a very similar sound, especially to the 60s Beatles music. And they were popular in the mid 90s. But, they were probably more popular in England than they were in the United States. And I think that's the main thing, was that the Beatles were huge here.
I think if you had, if you had a world where the Beatles didn't exist and they were created today, I don't think they're the mega massive hit band that they became.
Well, now you just ruined the movie Yesterday for a lot of people.
Right. That's true.
He woke up in a world that didn't have it, and he, you know, became a mega superstar.
He stole all of the songs. That's true. It's true. Maybe it would. Maybe it would. I don't know. I mean, Ed Sheeran's famous. He's popular.
Yeah.
He kind of writes those same kind of songs.
You know, these songs might be popular because in today's society where they need things fast, but they need things to be over fast. The Beatles would fit right in because their songs were like 2 minutes long.
Right. That's true. That's true.
You're like, you get the whole song, you're in and out, and you're like, okay, we're good.
What a different world we live in, though, that you could have a story like crime stopped when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan.
Right.
Like the calls to police stations plummeted in the time that they were on. We don't live in that world anymore.
No.
We don't live in that world. There is a group collection of watching the same thing at the same time.
You know, until Wild Stallions comes out.
Yeah, that's right.
And say, you know, aligns the, you know, universal peace across the galaxy.
That's right.
We're always going to be fighting.
So tonight, Game 6 in Phoenix as the Suns take on Denver. Denver is now, according to some sports books, the betting favorite to win the NBA Finals.
Weren't they always?
No.
The NBA Finals.
Nope.
I thought you were just going to a Western Conference. I was like, aren't they?
No, it was Boston for a while. And then with Boston fell apart, the new favorite was it? Was it Philadelphia? I think it might have been Philadelphia. I don't follow it as closely. But now Denver, according to books, are the betting favorite to win the whole thing. The whole thing. Absolutely. I could see it too. But the question tonight was going to be, and I was kind of hoping it would, but when we went on this morning, we found out Chris Paul is not playing tonight. So this means it's another game. But again, Phoenix is a different team when he's not on the court. They're a better team when he's on the court. I don't like this. Are they better without Chris Paul conversation? I don't like that conversation. They are better when Chris Paul is there. They are. They're different when he's not, of course. So Devin Booker has to handle the ball more. And obviously the scoring duo of him and Durant have to put in numbers. If they can't put in numbers, Denver's going to win this game tonight, right? Yes, you need a Jock Landale. Yes, you need a Landry Shamet. Yes, you need somebody else to sort of chip in. Maybe Cameron Payne is going to have to do a little more, right? When Chris Paul is on the court, he's the facilitator. The offense flows through him. He can run tempo. He can help DeAndre Ayton, who's got a rib contusion tonight from getting hit in game 5. But everything flows through him. So, yes, did they win 2 games at home without him? Yes. But I'm not buying a whole they're better without him. I think a 38-year-old Chris Paul is still very important to this team. As we talked about yesterday, they were up by 8 points against the Nuggets in Game 2 in Denver. And what an interesting series this would have been if he didn't sustain the groin injury and the Suns did win that Game 2 in Denver. It would have been a very interesting series. But here's what I'm worried about if I'm a Suns fan. That this is a Denver team that is getting more and more used to playing Phoenix without Chris Paul. And again, Mike Malone is looking at it from a standpoint of how good we were in the games where we lost. We didn't stink. We weren't terrible. We got beat, but we got beat because if you look over there, we talked about this when after game 4. Nikola Jokic had 53 points. But all anybody could talk about was the 36 that Devin Booker had and the 36 that Kevin Durant had, but mostly on Booker because of what his shooting efficiency was in both games 3 and 4. Now, Jokic's 53 wasn't a quiet 53. I mean, you noticed it. But because the winner gets the spoils of the war, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker were, what a night, what a performance, what great basketball. Well, the Nuggets had their own guy that played good basketball and were almost there. We're almost there and winning. But I love Phoenix at home. I think they really do feed off that atmosphere. I do think they win tonight. I think this is a game 7, and we'll see when we get back up to the mile-high altitude. But I don't think the Phoenix Suns are better without Chris Paul. I wish they had him tonight. I wish they had him tonight because I'd love a little bit extra element into this series. But I wonder how much Mike Malone is getting from playing this team now without him, what has worked, what hasn't worked, what needs to happen for Phoenix in order to beat the Nuggets, and how the Nuggets are playing without having Chris Paul on the court in terms of defense and what he means to the Phoenix's offense. But the team that is really intriguing me tonight is Philadelphia. It's kind of appropriate that our Throwback Thursday is Dr. J in the 1980 Finals. The Philadelphia 76ers have had their own demons in the postseason. That's for sure. They don't get to the finals very often. When was their last finals appearance? Was that with Allen Iverson and the Lakers back in one of the 2000s? Is that their last finals appearance?
I think so.
And as I've said many times, if you want to...
Because then they went on that streak where they just got the number one pick every single year.
That's right, yeah.
Couldn't do anything with it.
That's right. And I've said many times, when you want to write the history of the 80s, and it's a Magic and Bird era, it's a Lakers-Celtics era, you can't write it without Philadelphia and Houston. There were two teams that were there poking their nose up at the hey, look at Celtics-Lakers, but there was a period of time where the Rockets went to two finals and the Sixers went to three finals in the early 80s. And made a mess of Celtics trying to win the East all the time. Then they disappeared, you know, as Andrew Toney and Bobby Jones, Caldwell Jones and the Doctor and everybody sort of, Maurice Cheek sort of went away. They disappeared and the Pistons came along and then the Bulls came along. But the Celtics had problems with the Sixers for a while. And the Sixers, when they got Moses Malone, were the best team in the NBA in 1983. But they are one game away from taking this team that's had this, not necessarily an identity crisis, I think it's an overblown term, but they were trying to figure out, how good are we, right? How good are we with Harden, Embiid when he's healthy, Embiid when he's not healthy, Tyrese Maxey, like all these. Now they're one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals, and they're doing it by just beating Boston at their own game. I asked this question yesterday when it came to with the Sixers, Noah Varek. How much of what we're seeing in that series is Boston beating themselves? I mean, the Sixers are playing. James Harden's got two wins. With two wins, James Harden has over 40 points. Didn't need to score 20 points in their win in Game 5. Joel Embiid had 33. But Boston is killing themselves with mistakes, killing themselves with bad decisions, killing themselves with the lack of defensive intensity that has been something that's been there all season long. And listen, I think that it is unfair for Boston to jump all over Joe Mazzulla. This is his first run at being in the postseason. But that old line, that old cliche in sports, you never want to be the guy that follows the guy. Be the guy that followed the guy that follows the guy. You don't want to. The problem is that when you see a guy like Ime Udoka, who never coached in the NBA before, become the head coach of the Celtics, change the disciplinary approach to the Celtics, how he treated the players, how he asked for more input, and how yet he was had the team very focused on the court, and they got it. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals. They got to the NBA Finals. They took Golden State a good little distance before finally losing, and then to hand the reins to Joe Mazzulla and say, oh, be exactly that. Well, that is a rarity in this business. Then look on the flip side of that. You've got Doc Rivers, who won a championship with the Celtics, who's been to the playoffs with a number of different teams, who knows how this is done, who knows how to make those quick adjustments and the long-term adjustments. Mazzulla has got a team that's very undisciplined right now, but in its first year, I'm going to cut him a little slack. Philadelphia is likely to win this game tonight and move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think Phoenix is going to win. I think Phoenix will beat Denver, and we will have a game set. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along tonight. Tiger Woods pulled out of the PGA Championship next week at Oak Hill. But that's not surprising. He didn't play, pulled out of the second round of the Masters. But is it surprising when Tiger Woods is not playing because of injury? I don't think so.
Not anymore.
I think it's like, all right. Now Tiger Woods ain't playing anymore.
God, if I'm the PGA, I don't even know if I'd announce it.
Yeah.
Trying to get everyone to keep buying those tickets.
Yeah, keep buying tickets. Tiger might come. Tiger might play.
He might be there. He didn't say no yet.
Exactly. But Jordan Spieth, who's not playing this week in Dallas, his hometown, he has a left wrist injury, so he's not playing in the AT&T Byron Nelson. Now, listen, if you follow golf a little bit, this is like Jordan Spieth as a teenager in high school got to play in this tournament. So it's a very special tournament for him being in his hometown of Dallas. But he pulled out and decided to focus his attention on getting better for the PGA Championship. He needs a PGA Championship to win the career Grand Slam. Only a few people in the history of the sport has won the career Grand Slam. So that would be very, very special. But nevertheless, that is the PGA Championship. That's coming up next week in Oak Hill in Rochester, New York. So, but Tiger Woods is not playing. Tiger Woods, we've said this many times, this is what you're getting from Tiger Woods is going to be interesting. What you're going to get in the future from Tiger Woods is going to be interesting. This is a guy where he's battling two things that are not in his favor to be a competitive golfer. Actually, I should say three things that are going to affect the way we see Tiger Woods in competitive golf going forward. The first thing he's battling is father time, right? But Phil Mickelson has shown that you can win in your 50s. You can win a major in your 50s, and Tiger certainly is capable of, like, he's not he's not 48, like going on 70, right? He still can hit the ball when he does a good distance. He still has a short game, all of those things. It's very rare, though. I mean, Phil Mickelson broke the mold to that, but we don't have 48-year-old major winners anymore. We don't have 50-year-old major winners anymore. Like, is Phil Mickelson the outlier to that, or better nutrition, better fitness, better equipment has allowed a level of competition? Freddie Couples made the cut at the Masters. You can still play at a high level, but winning, if that's what you want, if winning, that's a different story. So he's battling father time anyway. The second thing he's battling is, of course, the leg. The leg is robotic now. I mean, it's built with machines parts. It's being held together with metal screws, and he is trying to play on that. He's been playing, you know, he's at times played okay with that, but we've never really seen him explode and have a great round with it. We got to see him at the Masters last year make the cut, but the wear and tear and the grind got to him this year. He had that foot injury, and you couple with that with the pain that's in his leg. He's battling something that's going to prevent, it's never going to get better. He's not going to wake up at 60 and be like, man, I don't even know it anymore. Like, I don't even know I have this. He's probably going to have some level of pain for the rest of his life. Maybe it's not huge. Maybe it's just a little tweak. Maybe it's just a little bug that bothers him, but he's not going to play pain free. And the third thing is his own mind, his own mindset. He doesn't want to be a ceremonial golfer. He only wants to play in events when he's ready to play. So, that's a problem if you want to see him play in a major. If he doesn't feel like he can win the major and he's hurting, he's not going to play in the major.
Can you see him or picture him playing in like the senior circuit?
That's a great question, because that would at least help some criteria, right? He can be competitive there. It's mm-hmm. They're shorter courses, and some of the rounds are three rounds. I think they let you use a cart. I don't think he would want to use a cart, but you never know. I think they let you use a cart on the Champions Tour.
Might be afraid to crash
right?
it.
Right? Yeah, right? oh, nice. Very well played. And he could still be competitive. He can still, like, he can be in the environment he likes. But I remember saying this about when he was at the Genesis. Why wouldn't you? I know, I get it. People don't want to admit that they're not competitive. People are like, man, I would play poker until midnight till I won all the money. Like, right? Ever since he was a kid, he used to cry when he would lose at checkers. Like, we've created these characters out of these athletes mm-hmm. where they would torch their house down at 8 years old because they lost a game of horse. And Tiger still loves that about himself. He loves that part of his biography. Right. I used to play with my dad. I'm out there with pops, and I used to I couldn't beat him. And then when I could beat him, I wanted to beat him more and more and more and more and more and more. Like he loves that aspect about him. But the reality of it is he's not, that's not a reality for him with the busted leg, older age, not playing competitive golf a lot, that he's going to be doing that week in and week out at the majors. If you're going to four majors a year, plus a couple of tournaments you're hosting, how are you competitively ready to play on the tour? Like, how are you going to win the U.S. Open if you play twice competitively a year? Like, how are you going to do that? You're not. So But the Champions Tour might be something where he's like, oh, it's competition. I'm at that age bracket. I don't need to be fighting Justin Thomas for distance. And it's a short, they're shorter tournaments, they're shorter courses, and I can take a cart if I need to. If the pain is too much, I can get a cart. Even though I don't want the world to see me in a cart, I may have to do it. That's a good question. But if you're somebody that's never seen Tiger Woods hit a golf ball, if you're somebody that's never seen him play, and a major is coming to your area of the country, it's very unlikely he's going to be in the field. It just doesn't feel like right now he's going to be playing in these. Now, the LA Country Club is an interesting situation because the U.S. Open is going to be there in June. And the Los Angeles Country Club is hosting the U.S. Open for the first time. And that's, you know, again, Tiger Woods is from Southern California. He's from that area. Will he force himself is he going to go out there in Jupiter and go out to the Medalist Club and work out every day to be mentally and physically ready to tee it up at the LA Country Club? I'm sure that is on his list of things he wants to do in 2023, but I don't know. I don't know. I just wonder how much of that leg is just driving him nuts. Won the Masters.
And then he has that fourth issue going on where, I mean, he, once again, his social life, his public life is in the limelight.
That's right.
You know, he's dealing with the ex-girlfriend. And, you know, just new revelations keep coming about that. Or, you know, the court case that where she's suing him to be able to disclose everything.
I don't want to stick up for some of the behavior. But I can't imagine what it's got to be like for somebody who's an athlete, a billionaire, he's single, and he wants to be in a relationship. What it does, how many people are coming to you in your camp and going, you know, you just can't date her.
Right.
And you're like, why can't I? Tiger, okay. You know how much money you're worth? Do you know how much money you're worth? Like, we're going to protect you, and we're going to protect you at all cost. So she needs to sign this, this, and this. And you go, oh, so it might not even be him per se. It might be the people around him. He is surrounded by lawyers, financial advisors, the amount of people that have a vested interest,
a team.
Right. I mean, and you're going to go, hey, I met Joanne at the pastry store and we're in love. Yeah. Okay. Come here. Joanne, here's a book. He's going to have to make her sign, but we're in love. Yeah. And that's why she's going to get half in 2 years. Tiger, come on. There are reports he was rude and, you know, and whatnot.
Well,
and he kind of yelled at her and stuff. I'm not glossing over that.
No, and there was no refuting the, hey, pack your bags, we're going to Bahamas.
Yeah, right.
By the way, you're not.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I'm not sugarcoating his treatment of her,
it's same thing. If you were to join a very lucrative business that has a lot of private dealings.
Yeah.
That, you know, they don't want to disclose. I mean, imagine, all the paperwork that you have to sign with that, even in our industry.
Sure.
If you work for one station and you're let go or fired or whatever it might be, or you decide to quit, a lot of times you can't work for another place until the contract is fulfilled. Until the time is fulfilled, whatever was dictated earlier. And that's just us. We're nothings compared to Tiger. I can't imagine, the binder of stuff that she needs. I mean, it's like probably worse than signing for a mortgage.
It's got to be horrible. And again, if you're the girl and you have a pure heart in this relationship,
you are being
treated like a potential obstacle
that
has to be overcome.
Well, he probably didn't sign one with Elon, and, you know, she got everything.
Yeah, she got, yeah. Oh, my God. I'm sure. And also too, he's probably like, I love being in relationships. I love being with a relationship, but I am cautious. Like, I don't know who's in this for what reason. And you're always skeptical, but at the same time, I mean, his team is all over this. Like they're not going to let their man go down in another relationship where he's forking out $200 million or something to somebody in court.
Come back, not likely.
That's right. All right, we'll be back tomorrow for what happens tonight in the NBA and the schedule release.